Grade 6 Conference, Lecture 48, The Roman History Main Lesson. I just want to pause in going through a lot of the content of the Roman History block to talk a bit about its structure. Now, I've suggested two or three blocks on Roman history, depending on your own proclivities, how far you want to go. Most teachers nowadays do not have a natural connection to Roman history. It's something that has to be cultivated. And I would say, again, looking in the Durant's book, looking at Charles Kovacs' wonderful renditions of Roman history, one can make more of a connection to it. But it's certainly, with its austerity and its emphasis on war and martial victory, it's not necessarily something that lives strongly in the heart of all Waldorf teachers. But nonetheless, it's an important period with which to feel a connection. And we have to remember that Rudolf Steiner spoke of the rhythms of reincarnation as being approximately 1,000 years in the spiritual life between one life and another, a much longer period than in all other teachings about reincarnation. So if we think we're teaching the children of the 21st century, you know, the year 2000, 2010, 2020, and so on, when were these individuals most recently on the earth? Probably at the dawn of the second millennium, that is around the year 1000 AD CE. When were they on the earth before? Round about the time that Rome was dominant. Not that they were necessarily in Rome or even Roman citizens or occupied by Rome, but nonetheless at this time. So the consciousness of Roman times lives closer to the skin, we might say, in our children than, let's say, the consciousness of Egyptian times, with which many children feel connected in grade 5, or the consciousness of ancient Indian times by far. And then the more recent lifetime, the dawn of the second millennium, round about 1000 AD, we're going to be getting that far in sixth grade as well. This is very important that in grade 6, we are touching on two very possible periods in which we and our students lived at the same time on the earth. So even if Rome seems to leave you cold, it could very well be it leaves you cold, and it leaves many Waldorf teachers cold, not only because of our currently politically correct attitudes about one thing or another, but because it may have been a particularly difficult incarnation. These were not easy times for humanity with the hardening and fixing of the earth. So you want as much as possible to be able to bring warmth and enthusiasm for this time. So this is why I say you may want to do more than one main lesson block on it. So the first main lesson block, you should be able to go from the times of Aeneas to the seven kings of Rome and through stirring tales of the Republic. I would not try to go any further than that. You have lots of biographies, lots of events to take up there. In the second block, I would continue the life of the Republic, not so much in terms of biographies, but in terms of achievements. And that's where we get into Roman engineering, architecture, road building. And this is, as I said earlier, a time when the boys get very engaged and very enthused. The structure of the Roman army. What did Roman armor look like? What about Roman weapons? And with the typical terrible artistic taste of the sixth grader, they want to draw one battle scene after another filled with eyes detached from the head and brains opened up and things like that. And of course, I would encourage them to try to transform all of this aesthetically. On the other hand, I would not just look askance at all of this stuff either, because you don't know what they may be trying to process had they been in Rome themselves long ago. You may be helping them work out something that they saw that they were a party to that lived very, very strongly. You know, the brutality of war at this time, if you haven't caught on to that already, was pretty unparalleled. And it wasn't just a matter of dropping a bomb from, 30,000 feet on high or from a drone or something like that. You were right there, face-to-face battle. So you have to allow some of that to emerge. In the slideshows, I will show you battle scenes as drawn by girls and many as drawn by boys in my class and another class, just to give you an idea of, you know, what comes out and how to try to take this another step. So the second block should begin with Roman life and also include the girls, certainly Roman fashions. They were probably the first culture to really develop a sense not just for beauty in clothing, but for fashion, for clothing styles that changed and that carefully demarcated the different classes, what people could and could not wear, and so on. That could be very interesting. Roman food and diet, and certainly the discovery of the city of Pompeii, wonderfully encased in dust and pumice, so that a lot was left completely undamaged. There we can really give the children a slice of Roman life. And then in the second block, we want to look at the decay of the Republic, the inevitable Roman polarities that led to its demise, and the life and death of Julius Caesar, a figure whom I personally have never been able to make a strong connection to, and perhaps because of that, to help me, every class I have had has always strongly fallen in love with this individual and wept at his death and at all that followed. So there's a figure who is well worth 5 days or more. We could say that in Caesar, the reason that he made such a mark in history was that we have an individual who is so modern in nature. Although the ego was not to be vouchsafed to the human being until about 75, 100 years after Caesar's death, that is, with the coming of the Christ being onto the earth, nonetheless, Caesar bears such strong traces of egoity. Here we see the first real individuality in all of the history that the young people have learned thus far. More of an individual even than Alexander the Great. And it's good perhaps to compare him to Alexander, in whom Caesar, felt such a sense of awe, looking at Alexander's statue and saying, he had already at my age conquered half the world, and what have I done? So Caesar is really good to take up in great depth. And also you should see, when you're working with Caesar, a change in the children's drawing style. We'll look at this in the slides. So I'm going to take up some biographies via the slide presentations of student work. I'm not going to give them all to you in audio form alone. But we'll see then how Caesar is depicted by children. And this should be, ideally, you're teaching Caesar right before this halfway time in grade six, you know, January, February, so that he is accompanying then this transformation in the child's relationship to karma. And that should really be there in the main lesson. And then the third week of this block can be taken up with the wake of Caesar's death. Augustus and the decadent emperors. Children, of course, have a lot of fun with this. And you have to be careful not just to get caught up in all the goriness and insanity of the time, to keep a sense of balance there. But nonetheless, this is very important. You may wish to end that with the advent of Constantine and his vision and the changes that that was to effect in the Roman Empire. You may want to wait until your third block to take up Constantine. And then the third block would be the advent of Christianity, the final fall, decline and fall of the Roman Empire, and with this then the transformation of the empire into the Catholic side in Rome, and the eventual Greek Orthodox side, the Western and the Eastern churches, the Eastern church base then in Constantinople. And then out of this arise the Middle Ages. So you want to go ideally up to the year 1000 AD. Some teachers manage to take it a little bit further, and we'll be talking more about medieval history in another section of this these history lectures. In the warm-up segment of the main lesson every day, it's good if poetry about Rome can be recited. I have some examples in our PDFs. It's also good if now and then you can bring some Latin. A very gifted teacher in this regard named Adam Springwater, who teaches at the Sebastopol Independent School, which is a charter school in Sebastopol, California. More than any teacher that I know in recent years took up the teaching of Latin very seriously and got his class pretty far along. They did a wonderful job, and he wove it into the main lesson and also work with extra mains as well. So you can contact him and he can tell you more about what he did. But at least bringing to the children Latin epigrams is a wonderful pithiness to the Latin language. And many of these expressions have been translated into English. Some have been translated by Shakespeare, actually, and become sententious cliches of our time. But it's good to see where they originated. Also, that the children are getting a feeling for the recitation, particularly of 19th century poems about Rome. Many of the great English poets of the 19th century, the Romantics and particularly the Victorians, also looked at Roman life as a model of what is good and not so good for humanity. And you have some wonderful, strong verses to be done at that time. At this time also, keep working with math, even though you're in a history block, mental arithmetic, introducing Roman numerals, if the children haven't learned them before, or reviewing them now if they have, can be good. And working with Roman methods of computation. What was it like to multiply or divide using Roman numerals? that can be an interesting variation on math work. And also realizing that the Romans actually used an abacus most of the time. They knew very well that their methods of depicting numbers were incredibly awkward. You realize that the Romans were not a great mathematical culture. They sort of held their own, but did not advance anything terribly far. In spite of their remarkable engineering achievements, the mathematics was not always really there. And then also in the main lesson, give yourself half an hour or more to present these stories. They're really worth taking time. And always after you tell a Roman tale, leave some time open for discussion. You don't have to wait for it to sink deeply. There often will be very strong responses. And more, put the students into the role of these different players in Rome. Again and again, Romans are faced with decisions that are not crystal clear. There's a real modernity to their dilemmas. And they have to do something which is going to result in the loss of life somewhere or other, including at times their own. And it's very good for the sixth graders to start to recognize that in the absence of divine guidance, in spite of the augurs and in spite of the soothsayers and so on, people had to act out of themselves for the first time. We have a whole culture in which human beings must fall back on themselves and make decisions that are sometimes brilliant, sometimes flawed, but always characteristically human. So that's something else that for which we want to leave time in the main lesson. And lastly, be sure that there's time for really good work in the books. Doesn't have to be a lot. But a sixth grader should now really be able to penetrate a drawing, to try to approach something of three-dimensionality. There'll be some students in your class who are already getting a feeling for perspective or may already be fully seen in perspective. For that, you need the astral body. And they'll be intrigued with the aqueducts, with the temples, with the Appian Way, things stretching into the distance. And if they're trying to represent it that way, give them some help. But above all, this is the year when the human figure should be presented in the round. And that takes time, and that takes your help. If you're not feeling confident artistically, this is a good summer in which perhaps to work with some drawing the human figure books, or taking a class at a local community college in figure drawing, because for the next 3 years, you're going to need it. Okay, we'll hear more about the main lesson in some subsequent lectures, and we're now going to go on to the some more biographies in Rome.